Today's daf is Pesachim daf Lamed Aleph. We left off in the Mishnah at the Mishnah and daf Lamed Amid Beis at the end of the page in Lamed Amid Beis. Today's shir is sponsored by Elisha Graf in honor of Dovi Kupfer. We thank Elisha again very much for the sponsorship. So we're at the Mishnah on the bottom of daf Lamed Amid Beis. The Mishnah is going to discuss whether there's an issur of chametz shavur lafa Pesach on chametz that was used as a security on a loan between a Jew and a non-Jew. And we discussed yesterday, or we've been discussing for a while now, the concept of chametz shavur lafa Pesach in general. The previous Mishnah had said that chametz shavur lafa Pesach that was in the possession of a Jew on Pesach is a problem. If it was in the possession of a non-Jew on Pesach, it is not a problem. So the Gemara says, what if it's something in between Jew and non-Jew? It's a security on a loan that is between a Jew and a non-Jew. So in which direction is that going to be problematic? In which direction is that not going to be problematic? And the Gemara is going to relate this to a general discussion of a bal chov, if he has a mashkon, if he has some sort of security on a loan. So at what point do we assume that he is kona that mashkon? Do we assume that he's kona the mashkon as soon as the other party defaults on the loan? The guy doesn't pay back, so now the mashkon belongs to me. Or do we assume, no, the guy doesn't pay back, then it's a gloy milsul mafreya that the mashkon belonged to me the entire time, because this was my payment and I was in possession of it the entire time. So that's going to relate to our Mishnah. And then on base we're going to have another Mishnah about a building that collapses and chametz was in there, how far you have to go to check under a collapsed building for chametz. That's a totally new topic. But most of our topic is about mashkon and about chametz that's used in as something that plays some role in a halva'a between a Jew and a non-Jew. So let's see the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Nachri shilvas Yisrael alchem tzoachar Pesach mutar ba'ana." If a guy lends money to a Jew before Pesach, using the Jew's chametz as a security, so when the Jew defaults on the loan, the chametz is considered to have belonged to the guy the entire time, and therefore it's not a problem. Chametz shavur lafa Pesach, it's mutar ba'ana, since the guy was in possession of it the entire Pesach. So we assume that it went and it turns out that the Jew never paid back the loan, so we assume that that was the chametz of a guy the entire time, and therefore it is mutar b'ana, it is not a problem of chametz shavur lafa Pesach. There is a machlokas in the Rishonim, what the exact case is, meaning when was this loan due? Was this loan due after Pesach? Was this loan due before Pesach? So this is a discussion in the Rishonim. Rabbeinu Hananel, Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Rambam in the fourth paragraph of Chametz Matzah assume that the Zman Piraon was before Pesach, that the loan really came due before Pesach, and therefore the mashkon is shaykh to the guy, because it came due before Pesach, it wasn't paid before Pesach, so good, so then the mashkon certainly belongs to the guy at that point in time. And Rabbeinu Ephraim brings a raya to this from the Lashon of the Tosefta. The Tosefta writes, "Nachri shehilve es Yisrael al chemtzo va'amr lo, im lo basi kodem ha-Pesach, harehu machrlach." He says, look, if I don't come before Pesach to pay you back, then what I'm giving you right now should be yours after Pesach, mutar b'achila. So after Pesach, that chametz is going to be mutar b'achila, and certainly it's going to be mutar b'hana, the Tosefta says. So you see, it's dafka because he said, im lo basi kodem a Pesach. If I don't pay you back in the Zman, and that Zman is before Pesach. So the problem with that Shita and Rishonim is going to be is that we're going to see in the Gemara that this only works if you say Me'achshav. If at the time that you give the Mashkon, you say that the Mashkon should be Konilach Me'achshav. But if the Zman Piron is even the Zman Piron, the later date, is before Pesach, why do you have to say Me'achshav? He's already Konil before Pesach anyway. So that the Rishonim work on that. They have a hard time explaining it. They say maybe because if you don't say me'achshav, the nachri is not kona the mashkon when the lova says that if he doesn't pay at that time, it should belong to him, because that's an asmachta bialma. Meaning, in general, we have a concept called asmachta. If I say something, if I don't pay it back, then I'll give you my firstborn son. So you don't actually assume that I'm going to give you my first, unless you know my relationship with my firstborn son. But you don't actually assume that I plan on giving you my firstborn son. You assume that it's a melitza, it's an expression. I never plan on not paying you back, if that's what I tell you, if I make such a deal. I'll give you $10 million, and that's crazy. I would never give you that amount of money. So that's what we generally assume is asmachta. So if the guy just says that if I don't pay you back, then it should be yours, so that's that we assume is asmachta. But if he says, me'achshav, look, what I'm giving it to you right now it's a kinyan, then it takes away the problem of asmachta. That's why you would have to say me'achshav. That's how that group of Rishonim would assume. But there are many other Rishonim that understand the Mishnah entirely slightly differently. The Ravid in the Hasagas on the Rambam over there, the Rush, the Ritva, the Ran, many, many other Rishonim assume that the Mishnah is speaking about a case where the Zman of the Piraon, the loan becomes due after Pesach. And still, if the guy said Me'achshav and he doesn't pay the Nachri back, so it turns out that the Nachri was the owner the entire time because he said Me'achshav. So over there, we understand why those Rishonim need Me'achshav, because otherwise the Nachri is only going to become the owner after Pesach. So when it says Achara Pesach in the Mishnah, it's all how do you read those two words in the Mishnah, right? It says Nachri Shilvas Yisol Al Chemtso Achara Pesach. So which part of the phrase does Achara Pesach go with? Is it Nachri Shavu Yisrael Chemtso, Kama? Achara Pesach, Mutabana. So after Pesach, it's going to be Mutabana. Or is it, no, Nachri Shavu Yisrael Chemtso, Achara Pesach. He was Malvei Yisrael Chemtso to be paid back, Achara Pesach. Then it's going to be Mutabana. So that would be subject to that machlokas in the Rishonim. The Gemara is going to say later on, on Daf Memvav, in a couple of weeks from now, we're going to have a line in the Gemara that Reb Lazar holds that if a person has chala, let's say in his rishus, and it becomes chametz, so he's in violation of Bayirah Bayimatzi. Now, why is he in violation of Bayirah Bayimatzi? If I was mafrish chala, it doesn't belong to me. It belongs to Kohanim, to Shevet Kohuna. Now, no individual Kohen is going to violate Bayirah Bayimatzi because they didn't give it to anybody yet. But it's not mine, so why is it a violation? So the Gemara is going to have this concept called hoil. We're going to discuss that concept a lot later on in this Masechta, in a couple of weeks from now, concept of Hoyil, that since I could have done something, we view it as if I already did something. So how does that play a role over there? That since, when I'm Mafrish Chala, Hoyil, since I have the ability to undo the Hafrasha, to be Shoel on my Hafrasha, and make it that it's just regular dough, it's not Chala, so it doesn't belong to Sheva Kuna, so therefore, since I could be Oker, the Chalos of this Chala, the Mafreya, so, and it would be mine, therefore, even if I'm not Shoel on my Afrasha Schala, it's still considered mine, and I'm in violation by Yerol Bayimatze. So that's what the Rishonim, the Rabbeinu David and the Ran, point out that Lechora, that's going to be a Raya, when the Zman Piron is after Pesach, that even if the guy ultimately collects it after Pesach, but that only is because the Jew didn't pay the Chov, but the Jew had the ability to pay the chov the entire time. So why don't we say the same concept? That hoil, since the Jew could have paid the chov the entire time, and therefore that chametz would have definitely belonged to the Jew the entire time, so mele, that makes it chametz shavar lava pesach. It makes it that the Jew is in violation by Yerubba Yimatze, and therefore it should become chametz shavar lava pesach. So the Rishonim and the Achronim deal with this issue. Many different answers are given. Some of the Rishonim suggest that Rabbeinu David writes that maybe by chala, since the chametz is in your rishus, you could say hoel biyadol yishol because it's still in my house. But over here, I gave it to the guy, so we're not going to just rely on hoel to say that it's therefore mine the entire time, and it's going to be chametz shavu lav pesach. And Meiri says no, chala is different because all you need to undo your hafrashas chala is just to say that I'm being shol on the chala. I'm undoing it. It's just dibur bi'al. That's the hoil is not such a leap because all you need to do is dibur bialma. But when it comes to the chametz that I'm using as a collateral, it's not just speech. I have to actually pay him back if I want to get that chametz back. So that we're not going to make that leap of hoil to say that since I could have paid him back. But I thought the pashas like the Bach says. The Bach writes in the side of the Tur that we don't say hoil the yachol liftos. It's going to be aser. He says because what's the case of the gemara later on about chal? The gemara is not talking about chametz shavar lav pesach. The gemara is talking about the isra b'ayirah b'ayimatzeh. Am I considered the owner of the chametz right now? Maybe vis-a-vis the isra b'ayirah b'ayimatzeh, we're going to say hawil that I could have the entire time at any moment during Pesach. I could have made that chametz mine, so it's considered that I have some sort of achrayus on that chametz, some sort of connection to that chametz, and mele it's considered to be my chametz. But does that make it chametz shavar lav pesach? Maybe on Pesach it means that that's a problem, that I should really take care of that, and that I shouldn't have such a situation on Pesach. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be chametz shavar lav pesach. A mashkon doesn't become aser achar Pesach if I could have been poded on Pesach. It's only that it was a violation on Pesach itself. So that I thought was the Pashtus and how to answer that issue. Another point over here, the Magen Avraham in the side of the Shulchan Aruch raises the question: why isn't there a violation with this chametz even when the mashkon is in the hands of the nachri? But let's say there's an onus that happens to the mashkon. I give the mashkon to I borrow money from the guy. I give the mashkon to a guy. What happens if some terrible onus happens? There's a tornado and the mashkon gets blown away, right? So do I still have to pay the chov? I borrowed the money, I gave him this mashkon, now the tornado can blew the mashkon away. So the halach is, I still have to pay the chov. I'm not pater with the giving of the mashkon. So shouldn't that make it that the Yisrael has a chrayus on the chametz that he has, that he's keeping in the rishus of the guy? And if he has a chrayus, didn't we learn a gemara daf, hey, that makes it bali rabba yimatzeh, that I violate bali rabba yimatzeh because I have a chrayus on it? Meaning ultimately, if it gets destroyed, it's still going to be my problem. It's not going to be his problem. I'm still going to have to pay him back for what I owe him. So that's the kasha of the Magen Avraham. Why is it that it's not, that it's mutabar? No, we don't consider it to be chamei shavar lava pesach. Didn't the Jew violate bali rabba yimatzeh the entire time? So the Magen Avraham suggests that it's considered chamei shel nachri, since it's in the house of the Nachri, and the Jews Mekabel Achrayus, he says the Jews not going to be over on it when it's Chametz Shel Nachri Bebeis Nachri, where I have a Kabbalah Achrayus. Kabbalah Achrayus is only going to matter if it's Chametz Shel Nachri Bebeis Yisrael. That's what the Gemara said in Daf Hey, that if a guy keeps something in my Rishus, so he said Shelchay Yatara Avel Atara Shelachayrim Shel Gavoa. What did Shelachayrim mean? That if a guy's Chametz is in my Rishus, I'm not in violation of Bali Rabba Yimatzeh if I wasn't Mekabel Achrayus, and if I was Mekabel Achrayus, I am in violation of Bali Rabba Yimatzeh. But that's only when it's in my Rishus. If it's in his Rishus, then even though I have Achrayus and it's his Chametz and his Rishus, then there's not going to be a violation of Bali Rabba Yimatzeh. So that's one case in the Mishnah. Now says the Mishnah, the second half of the Mishnah, V'Yisrael Shehilves Nachri Al Chemtzo Achar HaPesach Aser Bahana. If you have the reverse case, a Jew lends money to a guy before Pesach using the guy's chametz as a security, so when the guy defaults on the loan, the chametz is considered to have been owned by the Jew the entire time, and therefore it's aser bahana after Pesach is considered to be chametz shavalava Pesach. Good, says the Gemara, Itmar. We have a general machlokas about how to understand a security in general. Who does it really belong to? Balchov, Abaye Yomer Lemafreya Hugova, V'Rav Amar Mikanu Labo Hugova. So Abaye says it goes back to when the security was given, and that's when the lender took ownership of it. In a case where an item is designated as security on a loan, the borrower defaults on the loan, Abaye considers the lender to be the owner of the item going back to the time of the loan, and therefore we're going to see the Nafkamina, we're going to see that the lender has the right to sell it, to give it to Hegdish, already from the time of the loan, it belongs to him. So, but Rava says, no, mikana laba ugova, that the lender only becomes the owner when the loan is defaulted on. So since the borrower could have paid money up until that last moment where the loan was defaulted on, so therefore the lender has no right to sell it, make it hegdish before that time. So says Gemara, kol hecha da akdish lova v'zavan lova, kuliyam lo pligi da asi malva v'tarif va'asi malva uparik. If the borrower had tried to sell it, so everyone would agree that the lender has the right to take it from whoever it was sold to. If the borrower tried to make it hegdish, certainly the lender can come and redeem it from hegdish. What do you mean redeem it? Can't he just take it? Why does he have to redeem it? He has to pay money? So that's what Rashi points out over here. Parak mina hegdish bedavar muat kedei shelo yomru hegdish yotzei b'lo pidyon. That there is a din derabanan that we don't want it to, it looks bad if you go to hegdish and just confiscate something from hegdish without paying for it. It looks like there's a way to get things back from Hegdish without paying. So you make him pay a token payment, just to make it look like you're not taking something directly from Hegdish. And that's the Mishnah of the Gemara quotes. The Tanan, Mosif O Dinar Upodas and Chasame Elu. You add a dinar. It doesn't mean you add a dinar to the loan. It means you spend a dinar. You take a dinar, give that to Hegdish in order to remove the items from Hegdish. So whether Mikanu Labo Gove or Lemafreyu Gove is not enough community in terms of does it belong to the borrower? It doesn't belong to the borrower. I mean, the borrower has very limited rights in this item that he gave as a mashkon. The whole machlokas, mikanu labo, ulmafreya, whether mikanu labo gova or ulmafreya gova, is to what extent does the lender have rights in this item during that interim time between the loan and the default of the loan. So that's where ki pligi dezavin malveh, the kaddish malveh, that's the issue. What if the malveh sold it? What if the malveh was makdish it? Is that binding? Is that a valid sale? Is it a valid way of making something hegdish? So Abaye yomar lemafreya hu gova. Abaye says the malveh already became the owner from the time of the loan. Kivan demata zimne velo pare. So since the loan was defaulted on, igloy milsa lemafreya, retroactively we say that it was in the Malva's Rishus the entire time, Vishapir Akdish, Vishapir Zavin, and he was fully within his rights to be Makdishit, he was fully within his rights to sell it, the sale is binding, the Hekdish is binding. Rava Amar Mikanula Bogova. Rava says no, it's Mikanula Bogova, that the item only belongs to the Malva from the time of the default. Kivan di ilu havale zuze have masalik lubazuze ishtakach dashtakakani. Because after all, if the borrower at any point in between would have had money, he would have had cash to pay, and he would have paid the cash, so this item does not belong to the lender. The lender would have to give the item right back. And therefore, when does the lender become the owner of this mashkon? Only at the time of default. And therefore, the lender has no right in the interim to be makdish it, to sell it. It's completely out of his rights. So says the Gemara, Umiya, now the Gemara is going to question Rava from two places. One of them is our Mishnah. That's why we're mentioning this Machlokas, Abaye and Rava over here. Umiya Amar Rava Hachi, does Rava really say this? Meaning, is it really true that Rava holds that the lender only becomes the owner at the time of the default of the loan and not earlier? So Umiya Amar Rava Hachi, Va'amar Rami Bar Chama, Ru'uvein Shemachar Sadal Shimon Ba'achrayis. Okay, this is going to get a little bit confusing, so try to follow along over here. It took me a few times. Reuven shemachar sadel shimon b'achrayus. Reuven sells a field to Shimon with achrayus, which means Reuven sells a field to Shimon. He says, Shimon, if you ever have any problems, if anyone ever gives you trouble, takes this, confiscates this field from you, I'll pay you back. It's fully guaranteed. So that I'm going to cover it if it ever gets taken away from you. V'zakfen lov b'milva. But instead of Shimon paying for it right up front, he owes the money as a loan. They view the money as a loan. So Reuven sells the field to Shimon for $100,000. Shimon pays nothing at the time. Reuven says, if anyone ever takes this field from you, Shimon, I'm going to cover it. But Shimon still owes the $100,000 for the field, right? Umeis Reuven. And then Reuven, the seller of the field, who has never collected the payment for the field, dies. Va'asa balchov de Reuven. Now some of Reuven's creditors, people Reuven owed money to, came v'taref lemi Shimon, and they take the field away from Shimon. So you would think that's divine justice, right? Shimon never paid for the field. Good, let him lose the field and let it go toward paying off Reuven's debts. That's a wonderful result. But here's what happens. Va'asa Shimon u'paisi b'zuzei. Shimon says, no, I don't want to give up this field. This field is worth $100,000 to me. And the truth is, I still owe the $100,000 for the field. I'd rather keep the field. Here's $100,000. And he pays off the creditor of Reuven. So instead of paying Reuven directly, he paid the creditor of Reuven the $100,000, thinking that now he'll be able to keep the field. So again, it sounds good. Sounds like everyone should be happy. Says the Gemara, no. Dinahu da'asu b'nei Reuven. The b'nei Reuven can come and say, Va'armi le l'Shimon, tell Shimon, anan metaltli shavak avun gabach. What did you owe our father? You owed our father money. You didn't owe our father a field. When you owe our father money, you don't pay that back to balei chov of our father, to creditors of our father. Any metaltlin that belonged to Yisomim does not have to go to pay back the debts of the father. The what has to pay back the debts of the father? Real property, real estate goes to pay the debts that the father had. So had the guy come to us and we had the cash, he would not have been able to collect the cash. That's a metaltli diasmi is the balchov lomishtabdi. What could he he collect? He could collect land. So you paid the guy cash. That was not his. He was not entitled to collect cash. So you still owe our father the $100,000. We'll take the land. Thank you very much. As the payment for, or cash, whatever you want to give, as the payment. So that's the halacha mikra din. So Shimon's going to come out the big loser, meaning because Shimon decided to pay cash instead of just giving back that land, Shimon's going to end up paying $100,000 and lose the land on top of it. So Amar Rava, Rava says, so what can we do for Shimon over here? We have to solve Shimon's problem. So Yipikeach Shimon, if Shimon is smart, here's what he should do. Magvi luhu ara, he should say, oh, you're right. I owe you $100,000. I owe your father $100,000. Sorry, I'm strapped for cash. Take the land. Give them the land back, and say, and then go back to them and say, "V'hadu gavilam minayim." And say, "Remember when your dad sold me the land? It was be'achrayas. He told me that if anyone ever gives me trouble and tries to take this land away from me, I can get it back from them. You guys just gave me trouble and took this land away from me, so now I'm going to take it back. Meaning that's my achrayas." So it'll turn out that Shimon paid the $100,000. Okay, that was a mistake. That was a strategic error in paying the $100,000. But he can cover his tracks. He can fix it. If he's smart, he'll let the Yisomim collect the land as the chov, and then he'll say, "Okay, but it was b'achrayus. If anyone collects it as a chov, I'm allowed to take it back." Damer of Nachman, Yisom shegavu karka b'chov asaviyem. If Yisomim collect karka as a chov of their father, bal chov chozer v'gavu samehen. The bal chov can come and collect it from them. Meaning, a bal, someone who the father owed money to, can collect that field that Yisomim themselves collected for payment for one of their father's loans. So, if their father was a lender and the Yisomim collect a field to pay off that loan, other balei chov, who the father owed money to, can come and collect back that field. So it's just over here, the same guy who is the person who paid the field in the first place is also collecting the field back from them. But that's perfectly fine. So says Gemara, why is that perfectly fine? Iam Rabishlam Lamafreya who gova antu lahalchi chozer v'gova osamehen to command the gova mechayin davu on dami. If you say that, if you're going to say that it's the mafreya who gova, so then it makes sense. Meaning, if you say the mafreya who gova, so then what you're going to say is that the creditor becomes the owner of the security retroactively. So Shimon can collect from the Yisomim because the land that they took from Shimon as the payment is considered to have belonged to their father. Because the mafreya, the father was owed all that money, so the father was owed this security for the land, this security of land. So it's ki'ilu belonged to the father the entire time, which would mean that the land is considered to be land that their father had left them, and not new land that they bought themselves. Land that their father had left them is now mechuyev to pay back the achrayus that the father owed. So that makes sense. The whole deal makes sense if you assume that way. Eliyamrit mikanu labo gove. But if you're going to assume that mikanu labo gove, that a creditor only becomes the owner of security after the default, so the land that the Yisomim collect, they collected only because Shimon defaulted. Shimon never paid for it. So when does that land become property of the Yisomim? Only when they actually collect it. So this is land that the Yisomim got as a new deal. It wasn't their father's. And if it wasn't their father's, it shouldn't have to pay the achrayus that the father had to Shimon. It's their land. It's the Yisomim's land. It has nothing to do with the achrayus that their father had to Shimon. Then the whole Eitzah wouldn't work. So if you can say, Mikan labo gova amay chazer v'gova samehen, why can Shimon recollect that land? Havi commanded Zavin Yasmi Nichsi Dami. It's like the Yisomim just bought their own property. When if the Yisomim decide to buy their own property, they don't have to pay back the achrayus that their father owed Shimon from that property. Vilu kani yasmi nichsi mika mishtabdi l'balchov. If you sell and buy property, is that property meshubad to a balchov? Absolutely not. So isn't this a raya that l'mafreyu who gove not mikan labo gove? And who's the one that said this wonderful eitzah that it's going to work? It was Rava. So how could you say that Rava is the one that says mikan labo who gove? You see, Rava clearly gives an eitzah that makes the assumption of l'mafreyu who gove. So it's not going to work. Says Gemara, no. Shiny Hassan. We'll see Rabbi Nassim in a second, but meaning that Shimon can tell the orphans that just like the land is mortgaged to pay Reuven back for the loan, for the money that I owe Reuven to pay for the land, so the land is mortgaged to pay Reuven back, it's also mortgaged to pay back Reuven's creditors, any balchov of Reuven. Shimon says, by the way, I happen to be one of Reuven's creditors, because if the land gets taken away from me, comes back to me. So it's just like it's mortgaged to pay Reuven back, it would be mortgaged to pay Reuven's creditors back, which would mean that, let's say, one of Reuven's creditors came and wanted to take the land. So we said at the very beginning, Shimon could absolutely give them the land, right? That could, so he says, I'm Reuven's creditor. So instead of giving it to some other creditor, I just gave it to myself. Why does that work? Why does the land that Reuven that Shimon owes to Reuven, why can Shimon give it to one of Reuven's creditors? So that's the din of Rabbi Nassim. The Tanya Rabbi Nassim Omer, Minayin Lenosha B'Chaveru Mana, V'Chaveru B'Chaveru, Shemotzin Mizeh V'Nosan Lozeh, Tamlo V'Nosan Lasher Hashamlo. That if Reuven owes Shimon money and Shimon owes Levi money, so Reuven can pay the money directly to Levi. It does not have to go through Shimon. Meaning Levi has the right to collect it straight from Reuven without he says, I don't trust Shimon. He hasn't paid me until this time. If you owe him money, I'm going to come collect it straight from you, and I don't want to get Shimon involved, and that is perfectly acceptable. So that's what's going on over here as well. That Shimon, in this case, Shimon is owed Reuven money, but Shimon was also owed money by Reuven. So Shimon says, instead of paying it back, I'm just going to keep it for myself. I'm going to take this land back for myself as payment. Now, Rashi over here says that this idea of Rava, Ipikach Shimon, here's what you should do. Give back the land and then recollect the land. So Rashi says that Shimon Katayna, that look, I don't have any money to pay you back. I know that I owe you money because, again, why did Shimon owe money to Reuven in the first place? He bought land and he never paid for it. He owes $100,000 for the land. So he says, I know I owe you money. I'm really supposed to pay you money. But he Katayna, look, I don't have any money. So you're going to, when I don't have any money, you'll have to collect the karka instead of the money, then it'll be Chozer V'Gova. So all the Rishonim asked, if he doesn't have any money to pay back, so what's the pikhlus? If Yitaka doesn't have money, if Shimon really doesn't have money, so then there's no pikhlus, it's just he doesn't have money. So the land is what goes to pay back the chov. There's no pikhlus involved in that. And if he does have money, so why does the pikhlus help? He's going against the halacha. The halacha is if you have money, you're not supposed to pay back in real estate. You're supposed to pay in money if you owe money. So if he has money to pay from, so what's going on? How could he's not allowed to pay with karka if he has money? So what's this whole pikhlus? Rava comes up with this brilliant data. Why is it a brilliant data at all? Manavshach. It's either unnecessary or it's wrong. So which is it? So Tosfos Maseches Ksuvos writes that you see from Rava that it's true that Din of Baal Chov, if he has money, he's supposed to pay back with money, not with karka. But if there's going to be some sort of loss to the Lova by paying back money, then the Lova is allowed, then he's allowed to pay back with karka. Meaning the din that you're supposed to pay back with cash rather than with karka is when it doesn't make a difference to you. But if you're going to suffer a significant loss by choosing to pay back with cash rather than paying back with money, Tosfos and Mechadesh, he's allowed to pay back with karka instead of with cash. That's how Tosfos deals with it. The Ravid writes a different approach. Ravid says that this malve is coming with the taina of karka that he had bought. That he's meaning since he's coming with the taina of karka, meaning that you had bought from me karka, so I can just return the karka. Meaning this is not a normal case where I owe somebody money and I just decide to give him a random plot of land. This is no random plot of land. This is the very land that I bought that I owe the money for. So certainly, if I sell something and the guy doesn't pay for it, what are the options? Either pay me or give me back the thing that I sold to you. So over here, that's what he's doing. Saying, you're right, it was never a sale. Here, take it back. Right, he's giving back the item that he sold to him. Now he's not saying it was never a sale. He's saying it was a sale because he still needs the achrayus to be able to collect it back. But that land has a special place in this transaction. It's not like he's giving him some other piece of land. He's giving him specifically this land. The Ritva suggests, in the name of Rabbeinu Shimshon, when we say give the Yisom, the Ritva says, what's going on over here? Is he really giving him the land and then collecting it? He's not doing that. Why would you do that? You give him the land and transfer over the deed and then transfer it back. Gets too many lawyers involved for no reason. He's just going to take it back anyway, right? What's he doing? He's saying, since I could give it back to you and I could collect it, so let's just leave it here. So he's not actually giving back land. He's not actually paying land as the chov, and therefore it's not a violation of that iser of paying back with land instead of with money when you owe money. Okay, that was all one kasha on Rava. So now it gets a little easier. Tanan, second kasha on Rava, straight from our Mishnah. Nachri shilvas yisrael alchem. So achra pesach mutar bana. So we saw in our Mishnah that if you have a goy lends money to a Jew before Pesach, the Jew's chametz is a security. If the Jew defaults on the loan, it's going to be the chametz is going to be mutter bana. It's not a problem with chametz shavu lav Pesach. It's considered to have belonged to the guy the entire time. So if you say the mafreya who gove, it makes sense why it belongs to the guy the entire time, because the guy is the owner of it from the moment of the loan. But if you're going to say that you only are that the lender only is kona the collateral mikana labo when the loan is defaulted, well then why is this chametz mutar bana after Pesach? Shouldn't it have been considered to be in the rishus of the Jew the entire time, and therefore it's chametz shavar lav haPesach? So says Gemara, hachol me'askinan kishehir hinu etzlo. That over here, the case is a little bit different. It's hir hinu etzlo. Mishnah speaking about a case where the borrower actually gave it to the lender to keep in his possession in advance, and that makes all the difference in the world. Meaning, he didn't just say this is security that's designated to pay this loan. He actually gave it to him and said, "Here, you hang on to it, and if I don't pay you back, this is yours." And that makes it more the guy's than it otherwise would have been if the Jew were holding on to it the entire time. Says Gemara, Lema Katanai. Maybe there's a brisa that has machlokas tanaim that aligns with the machlokas Abaye and Rava, whether mikanu labo gove or lemafreyu who gove. Yisrael shehuvel nachri al chemtzo la'achra Pesach eino over. A Jew lends money to a guy using the guy's chametz as a security, so it's not a violation of chametz shavu lav haPesach. Mishum Rav Meir amru over, but Rav Meir says yes, it is a violation of chametz shavu lav haPesach. What did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah said that it is a violation, like Rav Meir, right? Rav Stam Mishnah is Rav Meir, so that seems to fit that it is a violation of chametz shavu lav haPesach. So my lav ba'akam ifli, aren't they arguing about the following? The mar shavu lemafreyu gove, mar shavu mikanu labo gove. Isn't the whole issue who the owner is over Pesach? That if you say that, again, what was the case? The Jew lent money to the guy and took possession of the guy's chametz as the security. So if you say that mafreya who gove, so then it's chametz shavu lav Pesach. The Jew took possession of it right away. If you say mikanu labo gove, it's not chametz shavu lav Pesach. The Jew did not take possession of it right away. Good, that's exactly the machlokas. Says the Gemara, if that's really what they were arguing about, then the machloka should work in the reverse also. If it was a Nachri that lent money to a Jew and took possession of the Jew's chametz, we should have that same machlokas in the reverse. The shitos should just be reversed. So says Mar Vitizbra, does that really work? Ema Seifa, but when the Seifa goes through the reverse case, the Seifa does not just reverse the shitos. What does it say? Avol Nachri Shehilvu Yisrael Al Chemtzo Lachra Pesach Divrei Akol Over. That a Nachri that lends money to a Jew using the Jew's chametz as a security, everyone holds that that's chametz shavar lav haPesach. That's going to be over. That's going to be a problem. Shouldn't we just say that it's the reverse? That Lamandi Amar Hasam Eino Over, when the Jew was the lender with the guy's chametz, if you hold that it's not chametz shavar lav haPesach, Hacha Over, then when the guy is the lender, it should be chametz shavar lav haPesach. Lamandi Amar Hasam Over, and when the Jew is the lender, the guy that the shita that held that there is a violation of chametz shavar lav haPesach, Hacha Eino Over, would hold that over here there's not. The fact that we don't reverse the shitos in the reverse case tells you that the machlokas is not really about whether mikanu labo ugove or mafreyu ugove. So what is the machlokas about? Both the case of the resha and the case of the seifa is where he actually took possession of it. He gave it to him in advance. And they're really arguing about the shita of Rabbi Yitzchak. Dam Rabbi Yitzchak. How do I know that a balchov is considered to be the owner of the mashkon? Because it says, the Torah says that when you have a mashkon, let's say you take as a mashkon, people who borrow money, typically, it's not like today, where most often the most borrowing is done by businesses and companies, and people don't lend money to people who really need money. That's the mitzvah in the Torah, but no one is interested in lending to people who really need money. But it used to be that you'd lend money to people who actually need it, and because of that, that when they would give a mashkon, they were giving like their last items. They were giving their bare necessities. So they'd give their pajamas as a mashkon, and that was their only pair of pajamas. Every single night, they would need the pajamas back. So the pasuk says, yeah, you're supposed to give it back to them. That you're supposed to give back their pajamas every night, and then take it back as the mashkon the next morning. That's what you're supposed to do. And when you do that, it's considered a tzedakah for you to do such a thing. Well, wait a second. If I don't own it, Why is it a tzedakah that I'm giving it back to him at night? It's his. Of course I have to give it back to him at night. It belongs to him. It's his pajamas. What if I'm the owner, I understand you're going to call that a tzedakah. So says Gemara, that's the raya that a balchov is kona mashkon. So I mean, kona mashkon, tzedakah minayin. If the balchov was not kona the mashkon, why would it be called a tzedakah in any way? So mikan the balchov shekona mashkon. So Tanakama savar hani mili Yisrael mi Yisrael who the karina beiluchati at tzedakah. Tanakama says yes, that is true when we are dealing with two Jews. When we're dealing with a Jew who lends money, who takes a mashkon from another Jew. Yisrael mi nachri lo kani. But a Yisrael from a nachri is not kona the mashkon, and therefore it's that's the sheet of the Tanakama. The Tanakama says the Jew is not considered to own the chametz on Pesach because even though balchov is kona mashkon, we view the creditor as the owner. Generally, we view the creditor as owner of collateral. That you are kona mashkon. That's only when they're both Jewish. But a Jew does not become the owner of a collateral of a guy. From Meir Savar Kal V'Chomer Yisrael Mi Yisrael Kani Yisrael Mi Nachri Lo Kol Shkein. Normally, the way we view the difference between Jew and Jew relationships versus Jew and non-Jew relationships, we have a more favorable outcome when it comes to Jew and non-Jew. Meaning, we're going to have a more; it will be leaned a little bit more in favor of the Jew. So, if when it comes to taking a mashkon from another Jew, I become the owner of the mashkon. Then, for sure, when I take from a non-Jew, I should become the owner of the mashkon. And that's right, Meir. Is over, it becomes chametz shovel of Pesach because balchov kona mashkon. I am in fact kona the mashkon. Now the problem Bali Atosos raised over here in the top Tosos, we said Hachmei Skinsher Hinu Etzlo, and they're arguing this din of balchov kona mashkon is the Gemara B'Metzia Daf Pei Beis tells us that yeah Rabbi Yitzchak calls balchov kona mashkon. That's only mashkon b'shas halva. Mashkon shalob b'shas halva, where the mashkon was given at the zman piron, he couldn't pay it back, so he gave a mashkon then. But a mashkon b'shas halva, he does not hold balchov kona mashkon. So that's the kasha all the rishonim are bothered by over here. Right? Our gemara is hirhinu etzlo. It's where you gave it to him originally in the first place. That's the whole point of our sugya, where you gave it to him originally. But if you look in the original context of the statement of balchov kona mashkon, it's only when you gave the mashkon later on, when you gave the mashkon when you couldn't pay it back. So that's a problem that the rishonim deal with. Some of the rishonim suggest that the Ramban suggests the gemara doesn't really say that it's only when you. The Gemara says it as a havamina, that maybe Rabbi Yitzchak holds that balchov kona mashkon is only going to pay it later. But if you look at the Gemara carefully, the Ramban tells you, no, it's only a havamina, but really the maskana, balchov is kona mashkon either way. Bali Atosos, Bali Mar have different approaches, not for now. The Tosefta went on, the Bryson went on to say that if a guy lends money to a Jew and takes the Jew's chametz as a collateral, so then everyone says that it's chametz shavu of Pesach. Why? Because even though balchov is kona mashkon, and even if you're going to argue when a Jew takes a mashkon from a guy, he's for sure kona mashkon, but a guy takes a mashkon from a Jew, it doesn't work in that direction. The guy is not kona the mashkon, therefore it still belongs to the Jew, the entire Pesach, and therefore it's chametz shavu of Pesach. Tanan. Nachri shilvi Yisrael lechem tzachar Pesach mutar ba'ana. So our Mishnah said, Nachri lends money to a Jew, uses the Jew's chametz as security, that is mutar ba'ana. It's not chametz shavu of Pesach. Nina midir hinu etzlo, hamen Nachri Yisrael lo kani. But wait a second, didn't we just say that the Nachri does not get possession of the mashkon? So why is it not a problem of chametz shavu of Pesach? So it says, well, lo kasha, hada amar le me'achshav, it all depends if he says me'achshav or not. In the Mishnah, it was when hirhinu etzlo, and he says that it should be yours me'achshav, it should be yours from right now. So even if you hold balchov of a nachri balchov is not kona mashkon, but if the Jew said to him me'achshav, so this is the ukimta that we were referring to before, that the whole case of our Mishnah is where you said me'achshav. Remember we discussed in the Mishnah when was the loan due, and we have to fit the idea of me'achshav with each shita, so this is where we know the idea that our Mishnah is talking about a case of me'achshav. How do I know that it makes a difference whether you say me'achshav but you don't say me'achshav. D'tanya, we have a brisa. Nachri shehirhin pasporni etzel Yisrael eino over. A nachri that gives a large loaf of bread to a Jew, it's eino over. It's not chametz rabbah of Pesach. V'mamrlo higaticha. But if he says higaticha, which is another way of saying me'achshav over. So maisha resha maisha sefer. What's the difference between the first case and the second case? Elav shmamina shayni hechadam le'me'achshav lechadalam le'me'achshav shmamina. You see that what must have changed in the second case is that he said me'achshav and therefore really belongs to him. Let's say you have a store belongs to a Jew. All the products of the store belong to the Jew, but there are non-Jewish workers there all the time. And then you find chametz in the store. So do you assume that the chametz is just one of the products of the store, and it was chametz of a Jew? Or do you assume the chametz was from one of the non-Jewish workers, and therefore it's not going to be a problem? So chametz shenimtza sham achar ha-pesach, Asr ba'ana. That chametz is going to be asr ba'ana, vein tzarech lomar ba'achila, and obviously asr ba'achila as well, meaning we assume it did not come from the worker, it came from the Jew, from the store. Chanah shel nachri, if it's the reverse, the store belongs to a guy, mali shel nachri, and all the food in the store belongs to the guy. Upala Yisrael nechaz v'yotzel l'sham, but there are Jewish workers in the store, chametz shenimtza sham achar ha-pesach, mutter ba'achila, vein tzarech lomar ba'ana. Then any chametz you find there is not going to be a problem. It's going to be mutter ba'achila, and it's going to be mutter ba'ana as well. That is our girsa in the Gemara. There is a girsa of Rabbeinu Chananel that has the exact reverse. Rabbeinu Chananel says the exact opposite. That in the case where the store belongs to the Jew, so then and there are non-Jewish and there are non-Jewish workers in the store, so then it's going to be mutter. You assume that it came from the workers, not from the Jew. That's the pashtus of Rabbeinu Chananel. That our girsa assumes it came from the store, Girsa of Rabbeinu Chananel assumes it came from the worker, not from the store. There is a way to touch up Rabbeinu Chananel differently, but we'll leave it aside for now because I want to try to get to at least the next Mishnah. Says the next Mishnah. Chametz shenafel of mapolos. You have chametz, brand new sugya. Chametz that the roof caves in on. Harehu kimavur. It's ki'ilu, it's already destroyed. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, kol shein hakel v'yachal achat pesach rav. Rav Gamliel says, how deeply buried does it have to be for it to be considered destroyed? As long as a dog won't be able to search after it and get it. So that's how deep it has to be. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Chisav, Tzarek Sheivat Ablibo. But you also need to do Bittul Chametz. Tana, Kamat Chafisa Sakelev. How deep do we assume a dog is able to dig and find the Chametz? Shlosha Tfachim, three Tfachim. We assume that's how far a dog can smell and sniff out and be able to retrieve the Chametz. So if it's more than three Tfachim deep, under rubble, you just mevatel it and that's it, your job is done. Less than three Tfachim deep, you need to uncover it and destroy it. Amle Ravacha Brid Rav Yosef Ravashi, Hadam Shmuel Ksaf Meilim Shmir El Bekarka. But Shmuel taught us a different thing. When you're a Shomer Chinam and you're watching someone's money for him, the best way to protect the money is by burying it, by putting it in Karka, maybe in a Shlosh Tfachim alo. Do you need to bury it three Tfachim underground? Or is it good enough just to cover it with some dirt? Meaning, is this din of three Tfachim, is that part of what we call burial? That whenever there's a din of Tvura, it's always got to be at least three Tfachim? Or is this just a localized din in terms of chametz that you want to make sure that a dog's not going to come and uncover it on Pesach, and three tefachim will stop the dog from uncovering it? So Amrlei, it's the latter. Hachamishum recha be'inu shloshet tefachim. Over here, the concern is that the dog is going to come and uncover it. So it's about where the dog can sniff, and we assume the dog is able to sniff out up until three tefachim. Over there you're protecting money. What are you protecting? The dog's not going to smell money. The dog doesn't have any interest in money. It's about making sure other people don't see it, because if someone sees it, they might come and steal it. So you just have to make sure it's covered from people seeing it. So you don't need three tefachim. The kama, so how much do you need? If you put just a thin layer of dirt on it, so that could easily blow away, and then someone will see it. So how deep do you have to put it to responsibly cover it from other people seeing it? So Amar Avram Bar Papa Misikra Tefach, that you cover it one tefach, and that's good enough. This in the oddest of places, this Gemara is quoted. It just shows you the mastery of Shas of the great poskim. Rav Meisha was asked in Yerodeh Chelik Aleph Simrei Shlam and Gimel, when we bury a mace. So we typically bury very deep underground, but that's the law, I think. That's why they bury so deep underground. But what's the halacha? How deep underground does a mace have to be buried? So Rav Meisha says that the Omek HaKever has to be Gimel Tefachim.
Why? Less than that, it's not going to be protected. The whole purpose of the kavura is to protect it from any animal being mevaza the maze, digging it up. Or so, how far does the dog smell? The dog smells three tefachim. So Rav Moshe says, you're going to tell me that maybe since we bury in a coffin, maybe you shouldn't eat three tefachim. He says, no, because basar ha-maze has a much stronger aroma than whatever chametz that you're going to put under the ground. And therefore, even in a coffin, you need three tefachim. He says, I don't think you need more than three tefachim, because we never find any makor anywhere that you need more than three tefachim, but at least three tefachim you need. Now, he goes on to say, let's just point out one other thing. The Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Pei Beis, the Gemara says that Zikno Shel Rabbi Preda found a skull that was by the Shari Yushalayim, and he says maybe this is the skull of Yehoyakim, because it says Kvuras Chamar Yikaver, that he was buried with the Kvura of a Chamar, and the Marsha over there says Yikaver's Mashma that it was a Kvura B'miktsas, that we give a Chamar. So how deep do we bury a Chamar? So Chamar is only buried one tefach underground, because that's the amount that a dog will still be able to sniff out. So if the Shir Chippas Hakel of a Shlosha Tefachim, like our sugya says, in order to avoid kvuras chamar, you need to cover it by three tefachim, where the dog is not going to be able to sniff it out. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll continue with the Mishnah on the bottom level of this.